couple of years ago, in your first interview, you said you wanted to instill a culture of innovation, ensure reliable and resilient infrastructure, and to promote open, transparent government. Give us your self-assessment on your tenure.
Well, we've made great progress on each of those fronts. I am very hopeful that the president's National Wireless Initiative, that really is the foundation for the next wave of economic growth on the internet, will be part of this tax extenders discussion in Congress, and that allows us the resources to not just provide the infrastructure we need to connect nearly 98% of the American people to high-speed broadband, but also to make good on a promise we made in the aftermath of 9/11 to deliver for our first responders a nationwide public safety broadband network. That gets us a foundation or infrastructure for the future. It clearly emphasizes the importance of security and privacy, and we've brought a bit of impatient convening to the table to drive the private sector to voluntary consensus standards, where it be safe, secure email standards in healthcare, to the ability to empower consumers with their energy data. We're in a safe, secure way. We're engaging using the tools of what we would call an open innovator, which leads me to the last point. We've now really shifted a bit of the culture. If you were to think about the broad story of where we are across our federal agencies, we are expanding the policy toolkit. No longer is data simply available by request, but it's now become default more transparent. No longer are we just acting as regulators or investors, if you will, through traditional means. We are acting as impatient conveners and initiating prizes and challenges. We are also attracting a new breed of policymaker, those that sit at the intersection of technology and policy, acting as idea entrepreneurs. So you're seeing slow and steady progress. Today, I'll be releasing an Open Innovators Toolkit to try to take some of the best of the ideas that we've seen work across our agencies and to help scale them across those that haven't quite yet gotten there.
And so tell us what's in that toolkit that's coming out today.
Well, we really emphasize that there are four key things that a policymaker can do, really absent additional authority. One of the most important things we can do is open up data, not just for those who seek it directly, but for its secondary use. We call this opening data for innovators and entrepreneurs. There's a set of techniques that we've deployed here, not just in the terms of technologically enabling data available in machine-readable form, but actually in policy through smart disclosure standards and the work we've done in the whole array of buttons, blue buttons, green buttons, and now in education, a My Data button. We're acting as impatient conveners. I mentioned the work we've done on health and energy, but that's been driven by a policy about federal engagement in standards activities, and we've recently deployed a memorandum that Cass Sunstein and I and Miriam Shapiro from the U.S. Trade Representative have issued to the agencies talking about how we build on the foundation of a strong private sector standards activity, but still acting as an impatient convener where appropriate. And third, we're initiating these challenges, prizes, and competitions, so we talk a bit about the mechanics of this. What are the methods by which we can spur change? You've seen Secretary Duncan launch Race to the Top. We've applied this in technological areas like Race to the Rooftop. You're seeing innovation funds, ARPA-E, Development Innovation Ventures, which will another featured story later today at the White House, as well as tapping into private sector sponsors of innovation challenges like Sanofi's Data Diabetes Design Challenge. And last but certainly not least, we started to expand our HR policies and tools to allow us to bring on board some of the best and the brightest that have that background more as entrepreneurs. And in the Food and Drug Administration, we're in the middle of an entrepreneurs in residence program, as well as just announced one for our custom and immigration, our citizenship and immigration service. So that's a little bit of the story you'll hear today.
And Mr. Chopra, as you work through all of this, I wanted to ask, how important has it been for the CTO position to be sort of a direct report to the president and have his ear? And as sort of a corollary to that, would it be beneficial, as some folks have suggested, to put that job in statute rather than leaving it to, you know, future presidents to decide whether there's a CTO or not?
I'm of two minds. There's no doubt that, first of all, the direct reporting to the president has been terrific on my end in terms of being able to engage on issues that one normally wouldn't describe to being technology policy. Everything you've heard me talk about is really about the application of technology to advance our health, our energy, our education, and other policy domains. So having a seat at the senior staff meeting allows us to bring those concepts at the highest levels to apply those in other areas. So on a personal level, to advance these projects, it's been critical. But it's also been important from a cultural standpoint. Knowing the president cares about this, I would presume, is one of the reasons why some of the agencies have been very open to these types of new ideas, because they know this is a priority from the top. I mean, it was the president's very first day in office where he initiated this whole concept of both naming the role that I have as well as calling on our government to be more open and transparent. So I think those points are very clear. It is a challenge to think about how to embody this in statute, in part because you can't force a president to establish a base of advisors that have his trust or her trust in the future. So, you know, it's very important to say, gosh, as a society, wouldn't it be great to ensure that we have a thoughtful role for technology, data, innovation, and policymaking? But if that's just not the personal priority of the next, you know, decades to come, leaders of our great country, then you can't force someone to be invited to the senior staff meeting. That's not how our policies are designed.
We are speaking with Anish Chopra, the federal chief technology officer, at least until today. And you mentioned earlier the toolkit, and that will offer agency people things they can do without requiring further authority. So it sounds like you're trying to push the idea of that impatient convener down to the agency level, so maybe it doesn't all have to be concentrated at the White House.
Well, let me be very clear. Quite the opposite. It was never really concentrated at the White House. This has always been about a bottom-up theory of change. And in a sense, I've just provided air cover for a lot of really creative and entrepreneurial folks in every federal agency. And so quite the opposite of the visual you've just described, this was never really about sort of some massive Washington-centric office in the White House that sort of commanded from on high. That's sort of the anti-approach of where we were. This is really about setting a vision, providing the air cover, allowing for some of these tools to have, you know, the authority to take cover. I mean, you know, it wasn't that obvious that you could run a challenge or a prize, and we've got the Competes Act reauthorization to make that permanent part of our congressional record. So we really mostly celebrated, encouraged, convened across those already entrepreneurial agencies. We've had it in our DNA. It just hadn't been brought to life in the same kind of spirit. And it's been exciting to watch over the last 3 years. This is a celebration of our agency's existing capacities being put to great use, as much as it is some sort of fancy, you know, top-down, you know, expertise.
Well, whichever end is on the top, this all came at a time when mobility started to really grow ubiquitous on the scene technologically, and also mainly mobility and also social media came on big, roughly the time that you guys arrived. Do you think that had a catalyzing effect on the ability to do these kinds of things?
Absolutely. It is difficult, to say the least, to invite the American people to participate in our democracy. You know, I remember early going to these public meetings that are theoretically open to the public, but the room is filled with lobbyists and insiders, and regular folks just weren't really available to be a part of this. Thanks to technology, the modern communications and messaging platforms, it is near frictionless for folks to understand about a challenge and to engage. I mean, the great work of my colleague Macon Phillips in establishing our We the People petitioning platform is sort of the latest manifestation of this. You can literally express your views with the click of a button, and that concept that you wish to invite your peers in America to engage on, you can literally post that message on Twitter or Facebook and invite others to join you. I mean, how else could you get hundreds of thousands of people to sign a petition in hours or days, as opposed to, you know, manually knocking on doors and asking folks to build up a grassroots field? It's just a less friction, you know, method, and it's really opened it up. So it's not that it's a terrific tool in it unto itself. It was Twitter and Facebook and all these tools show up, and all of a sudden, voila, the government's more open. No, it's the application of these techniques in the spirit with which we wish to convey and run our under the president's leadership for our administration. That it's the combination of the two. It's the capability plus the desire to see them work that has been critical to this success.
So as you head out the door for the last time today, and you already mentioned the National Wireless Initiative, what are some of the other most important things that your successor, whomever it is, needs to be focused on?
Well, the three things I believe that have been critical, and they still are works in progress, are obviously the work on strengthening our infrastructure for the next decade and beyond, and that is mostly about the wireless initiative, but you see it in smart grid, you see it in the work we're doing in next-gen air traffic control. So infusing our infrastructure with digitalization is an important aspect. You might call that 21st century infrastructure. Establishing the internet policy principles that we worked with our colleagues through the OECD to get 34 countries around the world endorsing a framework for how we strengthen our ability to grow the economy powered by the capabilities of the internet while still addressing some of the thorny challenges of our day on privacy, security, and even piracy. So the Internet Policy Principles framework that we've had endorsed by our friends around the world, an important document to still execute against and to continue to implement through. And last but certainly not least, this Open Innovators Toolkit. It's one thing to release it. It's another to actually put it into practice agency by agency, department by department, manager team by manager team. That's going to require a heavy lift, a focus on execution, and I'm very confident the team's going to take that task up.